Welcome to Weekly Insights at Winthrop Capital Management, where we discuss recent developments currently shaping the markets and industries in the global economy. Here's your host, Chief Investment Officer Greg Hahn.
Good morning. I'm Linda Jackson, Director of Marketing and Client Service for Winthrop Capital Management, subbing in for Greg Hahn, our CIO, and with me is our award-winning portfolio manager, Adam Kuntz. Hi, Adam.
Good morning.
So it's an exciting week in Indianapolis. March Madness is kicking into gear. Official bracket was released last night. Did you take a look?
Briefly took a look, yeah. I'm trying to see where my Alabama Crimson Tide came out.
See if they'll roll through, yeah. Well, I have to say I have a soft spot for a university I didn't even know about, Winthrop University in South Carolina. So I think all of us here at Winthrop Capital Management, we're going to be watching that team and hope they do well. So today's podcast, we're doing something a little bit different. We're going back into the vault, and we're looking at what we talked about a year ago when the pandemic was just getting started, and we were trying to wrap our heads around, you know, what was going to happen. So a year ago on this podcast, we discussed the spread of COVID-19 and how it was affecting the capital markets. Just to refresh your memory, on March 16th, 2020, it was the worst one-day sell-off in stock prices since 1987. The S&P was down 26% year-to-date, and bond yields declined to historic low levels. And at the same time, volatility spiked to four times the normal rate. So let's go through what we thought would happen and where we are now. And Adam, you can give us your take on some of these topics. First one is global economic growth. We expected that global growth would be negatively impacted by the coronavirus. And while it did take a dip in 2020 and declined 3.4%, it's now expected to increase 5.6% this year. Maybe a little bit lopsided, depending on which country we're talking about, but what's your take, Adam?
Yeah, so, I mean, I would say first is, you'll hear us say quite often, the stock clock is right twice a day. And going through this pandemic, you know, it really pushed a lot of humility on us in the decision process, the forward thinking. So you know, there were things we got right, there were things we got wrong last year. Mm-hmm. And yet, you know, you mentioned the 3.4% decline last year, but that came with one quarter that was down over 30%. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's important to realize how sharp the decline we had in growth, in jobs, and also in asset prices, right? Mm-hmm. So depending on which market you were in, you were down 30, maybe even 50%. So it was a very, very difficult year last year, difficult to get it right. Mm-hmm. But then when it all was said and done, you know, asset prices were much, much higher. So it turned out to be a very good year if you were able to ride through the storm. And I think it shows how asset allocation and not market timing and riding through different cycles of the market is extremely important, because mm-hmm. you know, those people that became very risk averse, pulled their money out, you missed a lot of opportunities on the way up. So that's just a kind of a foundation here. So looking forward, mm-hmm. You know, that we lost 22 million jobs last year. We've recovered 60% of those jobs that were lost, which means there's still quite a bit that we have to catch up. Mm-hmm. So while the stock market is at all-time highs, bond yields are still very, very low, we still have a long way to go to fully recover. When you look across the globe, you know, really the only country that has returned to pre-pandemic GDP levels is China. And what we're looking at is, you know, it's not just about growth. Yeah, we can grow a lot this year, but are we getting back to the gross domestic product that we had pre-pandemic and growing beyond that? That's really when you see us moving past a recession. So mm-hmm. this year, we think that there's the two main things that have to happen together to drive the type of growth, which is 6% GDP growth that we're expecting in 2021, is the combination of both stimulus in a vaccine. Mm-hmm. One without the other doesn't really lead to that kind of growth, because stimulus checks and putting money in people's pockets, as we've proven over the first two stimulus packages, doesn't really lead to growth. It leads to higher savings rates, people paying down debt, because there's just nothing that they can do. So that's where the vaccine moves in. Mm-hmm. Warmer weather, So all of those things happening at the same time, we think are going to lead to that, you know, exponential growth. So yes, we've been kind of saying that we think that this year and next year are going to be kind of like the roaring 20s, where people have been pent up, ready to do anything and everything that they can. Mm-hmm. So as things open up, the economy opens up, yes, the consumer will go out and spend.
I agree. I believe it. And then we talked about company earnings as well. You know, we expected that certain industries, including the energy pipeline, mall, REITs, and food service would be challenged during this period. And while earnings season has unofficially ended, expectations have been quite low all year. Last year, we saw three of the strongest earnings and revenue beat rates in history, with the average of more than 75% of companies beating expectations. Additionally, guidance raises have been fairly strong. We've talked about that. What do you think this means for the future, Adam?
We've talked quite a few times about this number of companies that have beaten their expectations. And really what that comes back to is the fact that the bar was set pretty low in 2020. Mm-hmm. Now, we are seeing an increase in guidance going forward, and that's good, and that sets the bar higher. But our outlook is that for 2021, the S&P 500 is going to have $165 per share of earnings. That's a 33% increase over last year. But once again, we saw pretty sharp declines in earnings across the S&P 500. And the same thing, we need to see the S&P 500 get to $175 a share, really to return to pre-pandemic earnings levels. Mm-hmm. So on a price-to-earnings ratio, you know, a valuation metric, the S&P 500 is going to be at 22 times earnings, which is very, very high relative to anything in history. And that's true across all asset classes that we're seeing valuation stretched. So put that in context over the last 20 years, the average forward PE ratio is 15 times. We're much higher than that. You'll hear a lot of explanations around why that's possible and why it can be sustained there. And some of those I agree with. But at the end of the day, valuation does matter, and we do need to see that number come down.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Next topic is residential housing. We expected the residential housing market to slow over the near term as consumers shift their priorities to increasing savings, which you mentioned just a bit ago. People take that stimulus check. Some of them are tucking it away in their bank accounts. Hopefully, we'll see a little more of that going into the economy. But the result of this year, it's been a little surprising to me, actually, that residential sales have been strong despite the pandemic and job losses and low inventory. I think there's just such a demand. People have been stuck at home and they look at their four walls and think, I might need a little bigger place. So housing prices have climbed. Cash out refinancing climbed 42% last year, according to the National Association of Realtors. And with mortgage rates inching up, we anticipate more people will take advantage of refinancing, but don't really see a significant impact on home sales. How does this affect your thinking, you know, both residential and commercial?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing people need to remember when they're thinking about residential real estate right now is the fact that a year ago, it was enacted that you could put your house into forbearance for 12 months, and it could not be reported to the credit bureau. So there's no negative impact, right? You could basically not pay your mortgage for 12 months, and there was just no negative impact. So we estimate about 30% of residential mortgages are in forbearance right now, which means, you know, people have $1,000, $1,200, maybe $2,000 a month that they haven't been paying over the last 12 months. So if you just, you know, on a napkin, do your math, 12 months from when probably that first would have happened would have been in April, you're about to see this spike in people that are having to pay their mortgage again. So one of our fears is that as that happens is A, savings rates will come down, but it won't be, really a boost to the economy because they're just paying something that they should have been paying all along. Mm-hmm. Secondly, there is a chance that obviously when they have to pay, they can't. And so they're forced to then sell their house. And so that would move some inventory back onto the market. But overall, I think that even if that happens, inventory is so low and the prices of inputs has gone up so much. Mm-hmm. So new home builds have gotten quite expensive relative to pre-existing homes, mm-hmm. is that really wouldn't have a big effect on the price of of homes. I think what we'll do is we'll see a slowdown in the acceleration of home prices going up. But I think we will see, you know, a little bit of a tick up in inventory. And so that'll kind of taper off where we're seeing home values. On the mortgage side, with interest rates ticking up, it still isn't meaningful enough to change decision-making processes on the buy side. But yes, I think if you haven't already refied your house, I don't know who's left to do that, They probably won't be doing it now that interest rates are a little bit higher. Mm-hmm. You'll get that behavior where they want to wait for the lows again. But Overall, yeah, I don't think there's going to be a significant impact to residential real estate.
Got it. Yeah. Well, and speaking of interest rates, we talked about that last year. We expected the Federal Reserve would maintain low interest rates to keep the economy moving and provide liquidity in the market. And sure enough, Federal Reserve Chairman Powell has said he intends to keep rates low until the labor market's stronger and inflation hits a 2% minimum target and expected to remain at that level or higher. So interest rates have been kind of a shifting thing lately. They've mm-hmm. ticked up recently. What's your take on that?
Yeah, so I mean, interest rates are driven by growth and inflation. You need both. Mm-hmm. And if you think about it, inflation has remained below 2% for quite a while. And what Powell is saying is that he wants to average out to 2%, which means that we have to get quite a bit above that to see this kind of average inflation rate over the last, you know, several years at 2%. So yes, the Fed is going to continue to be very, very easy. They're going to try to keep interest rates on the short end as you know, at zero, that zero bound. The question is, what are they going to do on the long end of the curve, which we've seen interest rates begin to tick up? Mm-hmm. There has been talk of something they did several years ago called Operation Twist, where they begin to sell short-term treasuries and buy longer-dated treasuries in order to try to push down rates on the long end. So there is talk of that. That would be, you know, a Fed policy to manipulate interest rates on the long end. And part of that would be driven by the fact that the steepness of the curve is at 10-year high. So the difference between the interest rate on the 2-year bond and the 30-year bond is over 200 basis points. So that's very, very steep for a curve. So it wouldn't surprise me to see the Fed move in. Mm-hmm. But really, when you're talking about what is the market going to do to interest rates, the Fed aside, is that if the market believes that the stimulus package and vaccines is going to be, you know, a growth driver, then there also is this belief that it will be an inflation driver. I think what we see is that will be definitely a short-term thing. I think we're going to continue to see pressure on interest rates to go higher as there's this, you know, kind of idea that stimulus is going to push inflation. But long run, I think that when you look at, you know, kind of all the structural issues, the technology that's all driving inflation actually down, those things are not going away. And so long run, we think interest rates are still going to continue to be low and probably go lower. Mm-hmm. But in the short term, yeah, I think they're going to continue to see rates go higher.
I'm going to switch gears a little bit and just talk about the price of financial assets, you know, since we're talking about interest rates, since those two go kind of hand in hand. We expected the price of financial assets would normalize as more information was discovered about the virus. But this is been one area that's a little bit of a wild card. You know, the Dow and the S&P hit record highs recently. And at the same time, bond prices are at risk with this rising inflation that we talked about. Although the Federal Reserve may have more to say about that this week when they meet, so we can see. But what's your take on financial assets?
Well, I mean, I think anyone that you ask, if you told them what was going to happen in 2020, if you asked them what you thought the stock market was going to do, I don't think there's anyone that would have told you that the stock market would be up mm-hmm. by 18%. And so I think what we're looking at is that investors are getting a little bit smarter. And last year, what we saw was investors driving returns forward, right? Mm-hmm. So there's this idea that, yes, we're going to get out of this pandemic. We're going to have a vaccine for the virus. So let's buy stocks now. Thinking ahead that we're going to get through this. Mm-hmm. So what we've effectively done is push future returns forward. So valuations are stretched, and that's why we're seeing that. So our outlook is that over the next, 3 to 5 years that we will see compressed returns. We're not calling for, really negative returns, but what we're saying is investors need to realize that what we had last year is not quote unquote normal mm-hmm. and should not be expected going forward. Mm-hmm. On the piece with, bonds and stocks, I think we got in this place where we thought that both stocks and bonds could go up at the same time. But really the whole point of asset allocation, the reason we use bonds in an asset allocation, even with low interest rates, is that it's, the most uncorrelated asset relative to stocks. So yeah, you would expect that when stock prices are going higher, growth is accelerating, you should expect that bonds, might be weaker. And then conversely, the reason you have in your portfolio is that if stocks sell off, growth expectations aren't met, then you would see, bond prices going higher, yields going lower. So the whole point there is really to manage risk in a portfolio and less about just getting wrapped around the axle of, mm-hmm. is everything in my portfolio going up?
Right. Yeah, that's a good point, just being balanced throughout. So last, I want to touch on the airline industry. I think a lot of people are taken to the friendly skies and getting out of Dodge. And, last year, of course, when everything ground to a halt, we expected the airline industry would require a bailout, much like the TARP program offered to banks during the 2008 financial crisis. And bailouts have come in waves for the airline industry in three surges. In April, they had $25 billion in grants and loans to pay flight attendants, pilots, and other employees. In December, they got $15 billion for payroll assistance. And last week, an additional payroll funding to the tune of $14 billion. And also, I just read that on Friday, the TSA screened more passengers on March 15th than any time since then. So, that's definitely a metric that I think speaks for the desire for people to get out and get traveling. What do we think about the airline industry and how that's been impacted and what will become of it?
Yeah, so people definitely want to get out, but the thing is, we can't get ahead of ourselves. You're not going to take 9 vacations this year, right? You're not going to, just because you didn't go anywhere last year, you're not going to.
I'm not.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think, yes, you're going to see the surge of people like, holy cow, I can finally get out. I'm going to go out. But I think we need to be cautious on this idea of pent-up demand, because there's only so much people can do mm-hmm. from, whether it's money limitation or their job or whatever it is. I don't think you're going to see this just rapid growth in travel over the next 2 years. You're just going to see it up front. Mm-hmm. The biggest issue and concern I have for airlines is the shift that COVID made to business travel. And so everything you're seeing right now, like the TSA numbers, is really that those are people taking vacations or some sort of trip that's, more pleasure oriented. Mm-hmm. But airlines really are leveraged to the business traveler. Why? Because they weren't price sensitive. If you needed to go to New York tomorrow, it didn't matter if it was $300 or $2,000, you did it. Mm-hmm. That is the customer airlines loved. It wasn't the vacationer that plans 3 months in advance, 6 months in advance, and mm-hmm. looks for the lowest rate. And so that business traveler has changed significantly. And the fact that virtual meetings have become acceptable mm-hmm. and preferred in many cases, that business traveler is not coming back in the same way. So to think that airlines are ever going to, or in the near term, get back to, the type of revenue they had pre-pandemic is a wrong view. Mm-hmm. So the airlines are going to continue to struggle. I think the best position is Southwest. They're an airline that's domestic oriented. They've always been really the vacation travelers airline. They have really low debt. So when you're looking at airlines and who can benefit the most, we like Southwest. When you look at American and United, who have tons of debt, American had just invested a lot of money into a new fleet that was really geared around the business traveler.
Yeah.
And they have a lot of debt because of that. They're going to continue to struggle. And they're not going to be able to add to capacity like other airlines are. So, I think it's just, you got to be cautious here and see what airlines are going to benefit going forward.
Absolutely. Well, good discussion, Adam. Appreciate the time. And thanks for listening, everybody. We will catch you next week.
All investments are subject to risk, including the possible loss of the money you invest. The information presented in this podcast is intended for educational purposes only and does not take into consideration your personal circumstances or other factors that may be important in making investment decisions. You may access and download this podcast only for your personal and non-commercial use. You may not use it in any other manner or for any other purpose without Winthrop's written permission. Copyright 2020, Winthrop Capital Management, LLC. All rights reserved.